always be with you. No one's ever really gone.
Welcome back to the Subbeacon, sponsored by Quip and ExpressVPN. I am your host, Sonny Bunch, filling in for Victor Mattis, who has once again decided to go on a lengthy vacation, abandoning you and I and Jonathan V. Last so he can gallivant about the tropics and shirk his duties. He sent us a picture of his beach bum lifestyle, JVL. I was pretty excited to see that big cock photo that he sent. It was it's a healthy looking rooster that they have on the island. I don't understand why it's just roaming around there.
What was Vic doing with the spatula?
No comment. Do not know. All right, joining JVL and I this week in place of Mr. Mattis is Matthew Continetti, editor-in-chief of the Washington Free Beacon and longtime friend of the show. Matt, how have you been since we last had you on 1 year ago?
I've been great.
What's new in your life since then? Well, please fill us in on your whole life.
The truth is, though, there's been something missing in my life for the past year, and that was my appearance on the Sub Beacon. Mm. And I had viewed that appearance as an audition for a semi-regular role, and little did I know that the three of you have this guild mentality.
Well, have won't the old let anyone in. Canceled. We were gonna bring you in as a permanent member on the old show, but then it was canceled, and the proprietors of the new place very, very tight. Yeah. We've gotten a lot of notes from the big boss here saying you got to keep it to three people.
Yeah. Well, I'm just excited to be back, because I've been thinking about the show, and everywhere I go, Sonny and JVL, everywhere I go and I talk to people, and they will say, I listened to you on the Sub Beacon that one time, or what is Sonny really like, or
I get a lot of questions like that.
Jonathan a nice person?
Ooh, what do you say
tough
to
one
that?
Oh,
no
tough one.
No is the answer to that final question.
That's true.
Sonny is like how he sounds.
Do they ask you about your watch ever? What are you wearing there? give me a quick wrist check.
You actually do wear a watch.
That's a new watch.
This is a Zodiac.
Oh, can I see?
But if you had asked me when I bought it, I would be able to tell you more information about it.
Did you buy this or did your wife buy this?
I picked
it
out.
Because your last watch was a white purchase.
We have a hard 20-second cap on watch talk. This
he's
episode.
Just looking at
I like
it.
We don't need. This is a very attractive dial. I like the applied
air. Not advertised in a middle-aged man's magazine.
Good. Done. We're done with that. Okay. JBL, how was
Watch
your
talk.
Weekend? How was your weekend?
Big news.
Big news.
Big news. Okay. Flash got his first win as a starter in the Travel League.
Look at that.
Came out, pitched three innings of no-hit, one-run baseball with 8 Ks.
No-hit, one run. How many walks?
I think he walked 3.
Where did the run come from?
So when you walk at this level, very few catchers can go from home to second.
Gotcha.
So stealing second is automatic.
Yeah, yeah.
Stealing third is a high percentage chance, and then all you do is wait for one pass ball.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I would say again, a dominant performance from the mound. He's now hitting in Travel League, hitting .500.
Wow.
In Little League, against the Little League competition, the rec competition, he's hitting a gaudy .857.
Wow. Pretty good numbers.
And we went and we did a classroom session, me and my boy, my asset, as I like to think of him, doing a deep dive through his numbers and looking for, see if we could sabermetric him up. Do a money ball flash a little bit. And the big thing I found is that his first pitch strikeout percentage is really high, 78%. When his first pitch to a batter is a strike, 78% of the time it ends in a K. And so we really got to bring that number up. Mm. So we're gonna focus for the next few weeks on that. And I'm convinced that he will be allowed to eat dinner most nights if he works very hard on it. And,
you got to give him goals to strive for.
And
you know, he needs to win.
Question.
Yes.
Who tabulates these numbers? at this level.
So it's all done via app, as you would imagine. And the game scoring is done via app, and the app then takes all of that and gives you detailed statistical analysis of everything.
Who is inputting the information? Is there like
is that you?
Our scorekeeper.
Or the scorekeeper.
So the team scorekeeper.
So do you have like a dedicated assistant coach who's just keeping balls and
strikes?
We
have a dedicated mom who does it. So a mother who has one child is the official scorekeeper.
Okay. Okay.
Those of us with more than one child spend most of our time during the games running around to keep our other children from killing themselves.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No,
that would be bad. That would be a bad sabermetric to have one child lost.
857
per game. That's pretty good. It's pretty good percent.
That's
pretty good batting average.
That's okay. He's Nolan Ryan like in that there are a lot of walks, a lot of strikeouts. But I've decided that instead of focusing on overall strike percentage, we really got to focus on first strike percentage. It's an easier thing to digest. Don't you think, Sonny?
Yes. You get that one thing that you got to focus on.
Yeah.
Just throw it as hard as you can right down the middle. They're not going to be able to catch up to it.
Well, that's true.
What's his favorite pitch?
He prefers his two-seam fastball to his four-seam fastball. He has a changeup, which I maybe sometimes cane him for if he throws it, because he doesn't need to throw a changeup. He just throws gas by people. I mean, there's no reason to try to trick batters yet.
Well, I mean, he needs to develop a repertoire.
He can develop his repertoire the first year the batters start catching up to him.
Okay. Well, but then he'll panic.
I don't think so. I let him practice. I let him practice the changeup, but I don't let him throw it in games. Mm. I see the changeup in a game, and you know
he gets it's the basement.
When we get home, you say, "Cut yourself a switch." Who
off
was
the
it?
Tree.
When did you first?
Football player got in trouble for that?
Oh, that was Adrian Peterson.
Oh, it was Adrian Peterson. Yeah. AP. That's right.
When did you first notice his ability with Flash?
About age five.
Age five.
I went over to the Continettis this weekend, and I won't name him. We don't name children
the
on
boy.
The show.
The boy.
The boy was just smashing balls, just hitting them all over the front yard.
Does he have the pink fat bat? That's what we started Flash with.
He has a blue bat that's like a MLB. Foam. Yeah, kind of foam. Yeah. But he started T-ball, too.
He's actually doing T-ball already.
Oh, yeah. He loves sports. He loves sports. And I took him to his first Nationals game this past weekend.
How'd he like
that
it?
That was my weekend. Loved it.
That's fantastic.
Loved it. We were there. We still were there until the top of the eighth. It was really my decision
he
to
leave.
He
lasted that long?
He would have stayed until the end of the game.
What time was the game? What was game time?
1:35.
Oh, so it was the Sunday game.
Yeah, I mean that's the time to take them in those Sunday afternoon games. But my decision because threatening rain, you know, and I didn't want to get caught in the rain.
Yeah.
And we were there in the outfield, center field, and not the best seats.
Do you have a doctor for him yet?
Sports medicine?
No, I have a...
I mean, we have a pediatrician.
I have an anti-aging physician who I found really helpful
special,
in the development of Flash.
Do you have a hyperbaric chamber in your
home? Some cream and some clear that I find it helpful to rub on the skin alternatingly that will help with some of his physical maturation.
I am... Anyone who knows me understands that it is simply poetic justice that my son loves sports because, believe it or not, I'm not the most athletic person.
I don't believe it.
Well, it's true. And nor am I the most coordinated person. And so I like, you know, stability, being sedentary. I like
Eating.
The indoors, right, as opposed to the outdoors. This is not the boy.
Well, the outdoors is where danger is and cold.
Danger,
and heat.
Weather.
Well, you know, like
others.
Yes.
20,000 years of evolution have taught us that.
Yeah. That's why we came indoors.
People are the worst. Yeah.
So I am taking a very encouraging and enthusiastic but hands off.
Are you assistant
approach.
Coaching the T ball stuff?
I'm there.
But are you like in the dugout?
Well, for, at this level,
coach first base?
At this age of T ball. You know, they ask the dads to be on the base there and everything because the skills are so varying. And there's still 1 4-year-old, you know. So, yeah, no, I'm there. I'm on the field and I'm out there in the yard like when Sonny was with us, you know. But I'm not ready to commit to the full, you know, sports medicine plan diet that you have adopted for Flash. I'm not there yet. That's what I'm saying.
Did you yell at him on the field? Was there a lot of, get on the bag?
There was a lot. I'll tell you, I had to remember. In the front yard, it was very interesting because Matt knows what he's supposed to do.
Yes.
When the pitch is coming, you got to get your arm up, you know, get your stance right.
I taught him his stance.
And he was constantly reminding him of this. And whenever he did what you said, crushed the ball.
It is funny because he has his skills in isolation. Can catch, he can throw, he can hit. Combining those skills, just like you're working on the first pitch strike, I'm working on combining the skills. So, for example, in his first game, which was a couple weeks ago, he hit it, smacked it, ground ball, but he thought he was just doing batting practice.
He didn't move. He did not run.
So I was on third base, and I said, run, run. And, you know, he did. And so it's those types of things. He's the biggest sports fan in the world. We watch the games and everything. SportsCenter at age 4 was his favorite program. But it's combining those. He only knows the things in isolation. So it's combining those things that we're working on.
You know, what's funny here is that it will be years before he figures out that you're not a King Jock.
Yes.
Because he will simply assume, Dad is teaching me all this
stuff. I'm dreading
Dad
that day.
Knows how to, when I do what Dad tells me to do when I hit, question, my dad basically, I'm sure he's old and retired now, but he was probably like Frank Thomas.
Well, you know, his grandpa, my father, is a jock and played college football and everything. And
his uncle.
And his uncle, my brother, as well as his other uncle, my brother-in-law, are athletic people, you know, and so he has a lot of familial support in that sense. But yeah, I am dreading the day that he realizes who, in fact, his father is.
All right.
Sonny, how was your weekend?
Oh, it was fine.
Did you any shoes?
I did not shine any shoes, sadly, this weekend. I need a good shoe shine. I need to get a good moisturizing leather lotion. Into some of these shoes.
Code for something?
No. It's just literally just leather lotion. Needs to be applied to my shoes.
Like that's what James Gunn was talking about.
But I'm good.
Put the leather lotion in the basket. Yeah,
that was the reference that came to my mind.
No, it's
Silence of the Lambs.
Not leather lotion because it's not leather yet. It's still skin at that point. It's just moisturizing lotion.
Sonny would know.
You gotta keep up on these things. All right. I'm glad that Matt's back, though, for another Star Wars-centric episode because the big news in the world of pop culture, of course, since we last convened, is that we have a new teaser trailer and a title for Star Wars Episode 9. That subtitle is The Rise of Skywalker. And the teaser trailer promised to return to the fan service we so love. Kylo Ren's mask, back. Wreckage of a Death Star, back. Emperor Palpatine himself, back. I love it. JVL, how excited are you for this?
On a scale of 1 to 10, I am a 0.
Mm. 0. About, 0. How about, 0.
How that breaks the scale.
How about you, Matthew? On a scale of 1 to 10, when you look at this.
When I watched that trailer, I have to say, last Friday, I was pretty excited.
Really?
Yes. However, in the days since, with this caveat, I knew exactly what was happening. I knew as soon as I was watching that trailer and when the end of the trailer happens and the big reveal, such as it is, occurs, I knew I was being manipulated. I knew a corporate behemoth with incredible power was using me and using my emotional responses, which they understood at a very deep level.
Oh, they know. In
order to get me to be enthused, even remotely enthused at their you know, mass marketed, cross brand, synergistic cultural event that they have planned for December. So I recognize the cynicism and kind of guile that is represented by the trailer for Episode 9, Rise of Skywalker.
What is that even? What is the Rise of
Skywalker? And it doesn't bother you. You were able to get past that? Or
I I was. However, the second caveat. In the days since, I find myself less and less excited.
Santino?
You guys were crowded around your computer screen literally 15 minutes ago.
That's work.
Watching the trailer and squealing with delight. The two of you.
That was Londo.
You were both very excited. I was sitting over here setting up, and I just heard little all over. I take all of this with a grain of salt. I will say I went from bored indifference to interest. So like before the trailer came out, I was at like a 2 probably. I would say I'm at like a 4 or 5 now.
I went from bored indifference to actual indifference.
In the trailer did you hate the most?
Well, I mean, so superficially, the thing I hated the most was having Mary Sue do bullet time action like she's Carrie Ann Moss, jumping backwards in a flip over a TIE fighter, which is moving at like 75 miles an hour somehow, while flying mere inches above the Earth, which is a thing that we had not previously. That's what a land speeder does, not a TIE fighter.
Right. Well, we've seen X-Wings close to the ground.
And remember in Rogue One, we learned that the Star Destroyers can enter atmospheres.
Yeah, right.
So everything that you thought you knew is wrong.
Yeah.
You must unlearn what you have learned.
That, to me, looks like a really stupid action beat.
Uh-huh.
And Star Wars it's been a long time since Star Wars has had good action beats, I think, actually. If you take Rogue One out of it, like, you know, the big fight at the end of Rogue One where they are trying to get to the button.
The throne room scene in Last Jedi is good. Good
the
scene.
Throne room scene where Snoke is cut in half.
And then red guards.
False. That is not good.
It is good. It is. It's just. It is
not good.
It is entertainingly choreographed and visually compelling.
The fact that it's the only good scene in the movie.
Literally the only good scene in the movie.
That might bolster its value in your eyes.
Sure, but you like it too.
I like it too, yeah. But I would say, thinking of JVL's point, I would go back. I think you'd have to go back to Revenge of the Sith for a really good. The end of Revenge of the Sith is a really excellent extended action sequence.
Yeah,
and has the drama and music, and you know you're going between two different toggling between two battles and such. This is so. Here's my takeaway from this trailer. I once again have come to appreciate the originality and value of the prequels. The achievement, I will go so far as to say, of the Star Wars prequel trilogy.
I gotta say, so I met a millennial last week.
Ugh.
Very nice guy, very smart guy, kind of nerdtastic. And he said to me, you know, somebody told me that you're a big Star Wars guy. I am too. I said, "Oh, great! What sort of Star Wars stuff are you into, friendo?" And he was like, "I'm more of a prequel guy."
The kids love like, the prequels.
I was like, "I'm sorry, you're a what?" And he's like, "Yeah, no, I was a kid when the prequels came out, and basically they are the three greatest movies ever made." And it was for me a wake up call of that this really is a generational.
Right.
I wondered if Star Wars is becoming like Saturday Night Live. That your favorite of the Star Wars is just the whatever ones were when you're 8 years old or something like
that.
Right. The other thing I didn't like was the Emperor. And the no one has ever really gone. Like, so Star Wars is going to now start using, I guess, the same logic as comic books when it comes to death, which is the thing I really, really hated about the big reveal at the end of Solo, a Star Wars story.
Darth Maul.
He was literally cut in half and fell down a shaft that's 30,000 feet long. And like, hey.
He survived.
Hey, how are you doing, man? What's up? Just me and Darth Maul hanging out. That's insane.
Totally.
Was he hanging out with Cheech and Chong? I know.
He went to Margaritaville on the way to form Crimson Dawn.
Was he at the Beach Bum's house?
So, you know, like this, the Space Mary Poppins, Princess Leia, all like, so we're going to go to a place where like Uncle Ben comes back to life and Bucky comes back to life.
Do you take my point though, that if you look, having said all what you just said, then you look at the prequel trilogy, and our problems with the prequel trilogy weren't that he was coming up with interesting things. It was that they were kind of bad movies from a cinema, not even from a cinematic, but kind of just from a, I don't know,
they actually storytelling. Tell a story.
They do tell. They tell an original story.
An original story.
They have new locale. Oh, guess what? From this trailer, we're on a desert planet, and we're on a jungle planet. And well, you know, you had the weird planets.
You had the water planet.
Utapau, where the people live in the whole like the burrows, right? In the Revenge of the Sith, you have to go into these burrows. And then you have the volcano. I mean, he was
Mustafar.
Like. Yeah, and then in that other great sequence at the end of Revenge of the Sith, where they're mowing down all of the Jedi, you see in the space of, I think, 2 minutes, seven different environments that are completely original.
Yeah, yeah.
And that was because he literally had 30 artists working 10 hours a day for 15 years with the instruction, give me something new. And now, they don't... It's give us something that will rekindle the feeling in the millennial, you know, the kind of early millennial / Gen X hyphenated person such as myself.
The Zennial
that will say, I'm old and I was once a child.
And also troll Rian Johnson.
The
thing that jumped out at me the most from that trailer was the reconstruction of Kylo Ren's helmet.
Right.
Which, like, I don't think that J.J. Abrams is specifically going out of his way to mess with Rian Johnson because they are all big part of the same big happy corporate family. But I do think that it was a signal to people that look, we're gonna undo some of this. Some of this is going to be undone, and I think it was telling that they do show the helmet because Matt, I think you were telling me that in the art of the art of the Force Awakens that there's a whole they spent months and months developing that mask. They spent months and months developing that mask and like working on
15 different iterations that lead up to what was in Force Awakens.
Right, and so like for the first thing that Rian Johnson does in the movie when we see Kylo Ren is to smash the helmet, like it struck me as like kind of an aggressive move on Johnson's part. So this it feels like some pushback. I loved it.
Are they all a big happy family?
Oh, who knows? Who knows? Because they all say the right
thing. This movie marks the end of Kathleen Kennedy's tenure. Right. I mean, by saying we're going on hiatus.
We'll see.
She's going to
be running all the TV stuff too, right?
Because the emphasis switches to television.
Yes.
With the real big news for the week.
The trailer for The Mandalorian.
Not a trailer, a sizzle reel.
Sizzle reel.
At the Star Wars gathering.
The surreptitiously recorded sizzle reel.
Yes.
Which
we saw it in very low definition.
Which has not been officially released.
Let me say this. I look at the trailer for Rise of the Skywalking or whatever it's called, and I think to myself, huh, I hope these space wizards settle their family dispute. I look at the trailer for The Mandalorian and I see, and I think, Werner Herzog versus IG-88. Oh my God, that's amazing! No? Is all of the excitement that I would have hoped to feel for the Star Wars property is really about The Mandalorian?
Well, it feels different, and it feels new, and it feels interesting,
right?
Yep,
it feels like a grown-up Star Wars property in the way
it's
and
new.
The key is you have to get rid of all the old characters. Mm. Stop. This is the success of Rogue One. Is that it just says, hey, here's a whole bunch of new characters and we're going to make them into people that you care about that are interesting looking.
It's really mind-boggling to me. I was complaining about this to Sonny earlier, which was, what is Star Wars? Star Wars is a samurai movie, a World War II movie, and a Western put in a blender and you get this thing. And yet, when they come to do these new movies of the... So this will be the fifth, right? So of the five, only one of them says, oh, that kind of mix of genres, let's pick one out and play with it.
Right.
Right. And that's Rogue One. Otherwise, it's just let's cannibalize everything that Lucas did. Oh, but by the way, we're not even doing, again, I'm just going back to prequels. There's so much space to run in that whole prequel trilogy. You know, all these whole clones. They did it on TV. Why not?
Clone Wars.
Right.
Yeah.
Or the Old Republic, right? I mean, there were a whole lot more space wizards, and there were more bad ones, too. And anyway, so instead, for these movies, it's let's try to pick up, you know, and evoke some type of nostalgia among our core audience. And I mean, maybe to his credit, Rian Johnson was trying to rebel against that. But at the same time, the stupid dice show up at the end of his movie. And they show up in Force Awakens. They show up in Solo. That's not what Star Wars is, not a pair of dice.
Well, and even Rogue One is not different. It is a movie about the creation of a thing from the first movie.
Sure. But it's tonally a World War II type, you know.
Yeah, dirty dozen, whatever. You
right,
know,
exactly. Right. That's what I'm saying. In a way that the others aren't. The others are, let's remake A New Hope, let's remake Empire, and I assume what they're going to do with this one is, let's remake Return of the Jedi, to the point where, one might infer from the teaser, there will be a climactic scene in the Emperor's throne room of the Death Star. That's one of the shots, them looking up at the...
That's what I'm excited for. That's what I want.
And in fact, in the Art of Force Awakens, this was one of the concepts, I believe, even when Lucas still was interested in doing the final trilogy, is locating something in the Emperor's throne room, which at that point in the art is submerged underwater. So, let's just go back to... I wonder what he thinks about. I mean, sitting on top of his mountain of money, what he actually thinks.
Did they consult with him at all on this one? I had heard rumors that they were talking to him.
Kathleen Kennedy gave an interview where she said that they did bring him in at the beginning.
Yeah.
But
on a scale of 1 to 10, how excited are you boys about The Mandalorian?
7.
6.
So for you, double what you are for episode 9.
No.
Like you said probably, you were a 3.
No, I said 4 or 5.
Said 4 or 5.
Yeah. Okay.
A little bit more, but I mean, my problem with this is now I'm going to have to get the Disney Channel.
Well, so this leads me to the other thing I wanted to talk about this, which is that, as I've been saying for years, Netflix is a fraud, is a paper tiger, and The Mandalorian is a gun aimed at the heart of Netflix. And it is a bid for the Disney Channel to have a sort of all-ages version of Game of Thrones on their streaming service, which only costs $6 a month.
$7.
I thought it was $5.99.
$6.99. Pretty sure it's $6.99.
Whatever. The point is, half of Netflix. And man alive, what is Netflix going to do? You saw that like Netflix's stock price dropped first
2%,
on the reveal of the price numbers for Disney Plus.
Yeah, $6.99 per month or $69.99 per year.
It's going to be amazing.
My thoughts on this. My thought on this is more or less simple, which is that I don't think $7 a month is enough to get people to cancel Netflix because of cost.
But they'll start noticing they don't use it as much.
So here's where I differ from Jonathan is I must confess The Mandalorian is the thing that excites me the least about Disney Plus. I am more excited about the Imagineering documentary that they're producing for Disney Plus.
Okay.
So like Disney aficionados like myself are excited because you are going to have the universe of Disney content in one place. And all the thing that has tortured me as a Disney fan for my adult life, which is the vaulting, is no more.
So wait, this is one thing I wasn't 100% clear on in the rollout. Are they going to have all of the films of all of the Disney original films will
as
be available?
As soon as the licensing agreements are voided.
Uh-huh. With other...
The content will move to Disney Plus. And the things that aren't there, my understanding is, with few exceptions, like, say, Song of the South, that, you know...
Yeah.
That movie never existed.
The things that they, you know... they will be on the site on day one.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you just like the original Disney shorts like I do, or you have your kids watch the, you know, my kids don't know what year it is, you know, in entertainment wise. It's let's watch Looney Tunes and let's watch the Three Little Pigs.
Every Disney Channel show that has ever been on the Disney Channel will be leaving Netflix and going there. Disney will instantly have the best kids selection there is. Right. And as a parent, when you use your streaming box as a babysitter, you only need one streaming service.
Vic Mattis will be very excited about that too. But I'll say that to me is the Netflix killer aspect.
Yeah.
It's not so much the new content they produce. It's that within 4 years, say, because I think some of the rights that Netflix owns to the Star Wars movies and the event in the Marvel movies go on, they will overlap with Disney Plus. But within 4 years, if you want to watch Simpsons, it's on Disney Plus. If you want to watch any of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, it's on Disney Plus. What does Netflix have?
They got to hope that they can
Narcos.
New friends.
They have
again.
Narcos.
No, yeah. But it's literally true. They have Stranger Things.
And Stranger Things.
This is literally the one viral show that they have. It's very, Stranger Things.
It's very interesting because Netflix today, or maybe yesterday it was, released a bunch of numbers. 45 million people watched The Highwaymen. 53 million people watched Triple Frontier. They've always been nervous because they should be, because they don't actually own very much. But this is why they are producing so many movies and TV shows and stuff. I don't know. I don't think this is a Netflix killer on its own, but I do think in a world in which you have 17 different streaming options. I mean, I'm just running through them. I was running through them in my head the other day. At this point, I am now subscribed to Netflix, Hulu, the Criterion Channel, HBO, and I still have like cable. I still have like a cable package.
What? You still have cable?
Well, the long version is they offered me essentially every channel for like 40% less than I had been paying before on a monthly basis. Enough. And I was like, I will take that. And I like it because I can, it has like all of the Encore and Stars and HBO and Cinemax, Showtime libraries on demand. I can watch like tons and tons of stuff for free. But anyway, I was just running through and I'm like, do I really need Hulu? Nah, I guess not. I don't know. Maybe I get rid of that. I don't know.
But so when I say it's going to kill Netflix, I don't mean that Netflix is going to go out of business. What I mean is that Netflix's current position, in which people treat it as if it is Comcast or something, like it is this giant media company that is going to take over all of entertainment, that is finished. And it will become just another content streaming service that happens to have had an early mover advantage because they don't own anything special. And they never did. And this is the big problem of what they... I would have moved things very differently for Netflix if I had been them. But they will be like a slightly larger version of Hulu.
Well, they're going to be HBO. They're going to be a big HBO. A bigger HBO,
unless
with
HBO
more,
becomes
with more money.
Them. I mean, this is...
Did you see that article that the Netflix DVD business is actually going pretty strong still?
Is it still
going? In fact, I think the Mattises are still DVD subscribed. So they'll have that.
They don't spend any money marketing it. It's all just...
But they might be forced to like ramp down the original production, you know, and try to focus on one or two, three or four different things. Well, I mean, how much money did they spend on content last year? I mean,
they can't keep releasing a whole season of television every week.
Plus movies.
Plus a movie every week forever. It just doesn't work.
It's
they don't have the money to do that.
Did you see Triple Frontier, Jonathan?
I did not. Did you like it?
Sonny and I recommend it.
Yeah.
It's a joint recommendation.
This is the Ben Affleck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Helmed?
No.
No. It's
directed by J.C. Shandor.
J.C. Shandor, yeah.
Okay.
And Oscar Isaac. It's really Oscar Isaac's movie, which is a good thing.
It is a good thing. I would say that. We almost did a show on that, didn't we?
We almost did, and we do. I think
you suggested we do The Beach Bum instead.
No. That was something else. No, that was the week Dumbo was out. And I was like, we should do The Beach Bum instead of Dumbo.
Fair enough.
Well, there's a problem for Disney. I mean, I guess they're making money. these live action
well,
remakes?
Well, this one is not. Dumbo.
But
is
Dumbo seems like it was a flop.
They have done better.
But the Lion,
than
they,
I
they have all their chips on the Lion King, I think.
Yeah.
Well, right. That'll come home.
All right. Transition. This is a transition. Before we get to the box office update, JBL, why don't you fill us in on Quip?
Quip. One of the most important things we do for our health every day is brushing our teeth, yet most of us don't do it properly. Quip is a better electric toothbrush created by dentists and designers. Quip was designed to make brushing your teeth more simple, affordable, and even enjoyable. Here's why I love Quip, and you will too. Sensitive sonic vibrations are gentle enough on your sensitive gums. Most people brush too hard, and some electric toothbrushes are too abrasive. Quip has a built-in 2-minute timer that pulses every 30 seconds to remind you when to switch sides and helps you get a full and even clean. Why is that? Because up to 90% of us don't actually brush for the full 2 minutes, and we don't brush evenly. A multi-use cover mounts to your mirror and unmounts to slide over your bristles for on-the-go brushing. This declutters your sink or cabinet and makes traveling with an electric toothbrush easy as anything. Quip doesn't require a clunky charger, and it runs for 3 months on one charge. Brush heads are automatically delivered on a dentist-recommended schedule every 3 months for just $5. Did you know that 3 out of 4 of us use bristles that are old, worn out, and ineffective? Quip is one of the first electric toothbrushes accepted by the American Dental Association and has thousands of verified 5-star reviews. That's why we love Quip and why they're backed by over 20,000 dental professionals. Quip starts at just $25, and if you go to getquip.com/subbeacon right now, you get your first refill pack free with a Quip electric toothbrush. That's your first refill pack free at getquip.com/subbeacon.
Excellent. All right, let's move on to the box office. We're running long already, guys. This is a great chat. I love it. Shazam continued to dominate at the box office this weekend, grossing more than $24 million for its first place finish.
What percentage drop is that?
54, I think. 53, 54.
That's not bad.
So it's not bad. It was a pretty average drop. Little, a gender and race swapped version of Big, came in second with $15 million. And finishing third was the movie we're going to talk about today, the Guillermo del Toro-free reboot of Hellboy, which grossed just $12 million. Before we get to that, JVL, do you have any box office thoughts?
Pass.
Matt, do you have any box office thoughts?
I do, because I was a little confused. I thought Shazam was a remake of Big.
Shazam is also...
But then you said there's another remake of Big.
So you have the superhero meets Big movie, and right. Then you have Black Lady meets Big movie.
Race, a story of race and gender swapping. Big, but also age. So it's a young person.
Well, but that's Big. Yeah, right. So it's like reverse
age. It's an intersectional Big.
Yes.
And then there's Shazam, which is just Big, but with the
Superman Big.
Okay. Yep. That was my question.
So I'll just do a quick review here. So let's all just discuss what we saw. I saw the movie. JVL, did you see the movie?
No. You told me we didn't have to.
That's not at all what I said.
You said we're not going to talk about that one. We're going to talk about the other.
No.
That's literally what you said.
Okay. Good. Well,
I'm
glad
we're going to talk about the other Hellboys, because you said Matt wants to really talk about the original two Hellboys.
Well, I said that he was going to talk about the original two Hellboys and that we could talk about the new one. Whatever.
Now
it doesn't matter.
We're all going to talk about
it. It doesn't matter.
I'm sorry. I thought that this was the show.
Okay, great. Well, did you see the first two Hellboys?
Yes.
So you watched the first two Hellboys. You didn't watch the new one that's out in theaters now.
Look, I thought it was a little strange. I'm not going to be honest. But when Vic's not here, I just do what I'm told.
Yeah. Okay.
You see what happens when Mattis leaves? Anarchy.
Yeah.
This is why I haven't been back on in a year.
Yes. Anyway, I didn't hate the new Hellboy as much as the Rotten Tomatoes score of 15% would suggest that I should have hated it.
15%?
15%. But it's not good. It's not good. The biggest problem with the movie is, in addition to being unnecessary, David Harbour is not very good as Hellboy. He plays Hellboy as kind of like it's like Luke Skywalker for the first half of Star Wars. Like, I kept expecting him to whine about going to Tosche Station and wanting to get some power converters. It's very like he's like dad all the time to the Ian McShane playing Professor Broom in this film.
That's not a correct characterization
of
Hellboy. That's not how Hellboy is supposed to behave.
It is how he behaves in this movie.
I'm not disputing your characterization.
You would know if you had seen
of
it.
Him. I am saying that is not true to the character.
I don't really care about the character of Hellboy though. Hellboy has never been a particularly
interesting. This is my shocked face.
This has never.
You
really
don't
been
care
a,
about Hellboy.
He's never really been a very interesting character. The Guillermo del Toro
was
movie.
Was he funny at all in this one?
Kind of. He's
kind
of funny.
Kind of a smart alecky.
He's kind of smart alecky.
Hard partying. Yeah. Guy.
What I liked about this, the Neil Marshall directed one that nobody else in this room saw, is that they play it as a like kind of crazy. Pulpy type movie instead of the first Hellboy, which is a little bit more serious in tone, I think. And I do like that. I do like the kind of heavy metal soundtrack with the like kind of grotesque violence and that sort of thing. That all works. The problem is that just none of the relationships make any sense.
Why was this franchise rebooted instead of just continued after hiatus? Why did
because
it
because Guillermo del Toro wanted too much money to make another one.
They couldn't have just hired somebody else.
No. He wanted like $150 million to make.
Right, but they couldn't have just hired another director to make Hellboy 3.
Why would they do that though? I mean, why would they do that instead of just rebooting it with a new director
because
who's doing it for cheaper?
Another, or, this is what I'm saying. Take the new director who will do it for cheap and just use him to make the third movie. You don't need another origin story.
Well, I don't know
that, what I'm saying.
I don't know that Ron Perlman would want to do that. I don't, you know.
Right. There's no Hellboy without Guillermo. And he has to make his fish movie. On the cheap.
He has to make his fish
movie.
But
if you see the progression from the first Hellboy to the second, you see how, if he had done a third, how large the canvas would have.
Yes, I think that's
would
correct.
Have to be. Because just the... Like you're saying, Sonny, the first one, a Lovecraftian horror, takes itself slightly more seriously. The second one is basically kind of a Lord of the Rings, Star Wars type fantasy.
And it's huge.
And the scale is huge. Yeah. The number of monsters, having just watched it the other night in preparation for the show, like the number of monsters he designed for Hellboy 2 is quantum factorials. Larger than what he's done in all of his other movies.
Yeah.
You know, usually it's just one or two, or like, you know, in Pan's Labyrinth, it's three maybe. But there's dozens upon dozens of them in just one scene in Hellboy 2. So to do Hellboy 3 right, which I imagine he thought would be the culmination of the trilogy, and really, how does Hellboy destroy humanity, which is always predicted or warned in the first two films, you'd have to, you know, to visualize hell. I mean, can you imagine Del Toro's hell? I mean, I can't imagine it. That's why I would like him to do it, because it'd be a fascinating piece of art just for him to picture it. But yeah, I can see why he'd walk away for a budget that was not up to his high artistic standards.
Did you guys like... Because I really enjoyed the first Hellboy.
I rewatched it yesterday, and it has not aged as well. As I remember, I remember liking it more than I did rewatching it this week.
Well, because it was incredibly fresh when it was first out.
Yeah.
Because we didn't have the glut of superhero movies.
Well, this is the thing.
It feels like another superhero movie.
This is the thing. I was actually thinking about this. It comes out in 2004, so it's greenlit sometime after X-Men and Spider-Man. It's like that first rush of superhero movies that was kind of between Spider-Man, but before the MCU really kicks off, you know? So it's kind of a weird in-betweener, and it looks kind of cheap and it looks kind of small. But what it does really well is it gets at the kind of emotional angst of Hellboy, you know, his relationship with his father, which is like played as a real father-son relationship, as opposed to the new one, which again, David Harbour's just kind of like, dad, you suck all the time. And like, it doesn't work. But also with Selma Blair, the I don't know whatever her like code name is, but Liz is very good, that whole relationship. But the second one, I wish I'd watched that one instead, because it is, it does have all of the great things that Guillermo del Toro does very well in spades. I mean, the march through the what is it, the marketplace there,
the troll market
scene, which is basically his like creature cantina moment, is just fantastic and fascinating, and it continues to play with the theme of, you know, Hellboy as a monster. Is he here to save us? Is he here to destroy us? And which side should he choose, frankly? Should he be on the side of the humans who hate him and want to destroy him?
Hellboy 2 has, I think, what is my favorite Del Toro monster, and that is the Angel of Death, where they bring, right before the climax of the film, where they confront the Golden Army, Hellboy has been mortally wounded by the bad elf prince. And so they go to the wherever the Golden Army is, but they meet this kind of troll who, without legs, who says, well, I know a guy who can rescue him, but the price is very heavy. And it turns out to be the what is referred to anyway in Del Toro-ania as the Angel of Death. And this is a beautiful, ghastly monster.
Reminiscent of the Pale Man from Pan's Labyrinth.
But different in other ways. Yeah. Inside, but you're right, the eyes are not on the face, which is an interesting kind of motif. I just realized, listening to you guys, I think I like looking at Del Toro's movies more than I like watching them. So for me, going to Del Toro, you kind of want to sit there and just study the frame, because there's so much that goes into every aspect of it, from the production design to the costuming to the creation of the monsters to the cinematography. They're craftsmanship, right? I mean, it's like looking at a Tiffany lamp or a stained glass window. You just kind of appreciate all the effort that went into it. Though I would say the one thing I did that struck me on this reviewing of Hellboy 2 was the score was pretty good. And I don't remember the score from the first movie, but it had kind of a nice adventurous score. So that was something that struck me as well.
Underrated MVP of all these movies, Doug Jones, who plays Abe Sapien and plays, I believe, the Angel of Death,
and
whose
voice was dubbed in the first Hellboy by David Hyde Pierce, uncredited David Hyde Pierce.
Yep.
But in the second Hellboy, they gave Doug Jones the right to have his own voice. And funnily enough, he actually
very similar.
And if you watch him on the Star Trek Discovery, where he plays Saru, you know, he sounds the same. You can kind of tell the David Hyde Pierce type lilt.
I was always shocked that the property of Hellboy was viable as a piece of cinema. I mean,
it's not.
Well, it was viable enough to get three movies.
Do you mean commercially viable or?
Yeah.
Because I don't think Hellboy is commercially viable. I mean, this is the problem.
As a franchise. It was viable enough. Hellboy 1 made a bunch of money, made more than it cost to make. And it's why they had a second one. I think the second one underperformed. But this is, you know, one of the earliest creator-owned indie things. I think Mike Mignola launches him in like 93. And it's really a cult, cult property within comic book world. I mean, nobody who is a casual comic book reader has any idea who Hellboy is. There was no cultural penetration in unlike, say, like the Punisher, right? Like every kind of knows what the Punisher is, even if you're not into comic books, because like it's out there. That is not true of Hellboy. That it was able to make the jump onto the big screen, I always took as a just kind of an amazing, like, how did this happen?
Yeah. Well, in a way that makes him the perfect sort of character to bring to the big screen, because you don't have lots of attachments to ideas of what the character should be. So you can adapt him for many audiences, many different ways, I think. I mean, look, I'm just looking at the box office numbers now. The first Hellboy grossed $59.6 million domestic. It grossed less than $100 million worldwide.
Right.
On a $66 million budget, which is not that good.
Mortal's Engines bad, though, or something.
Well, sure, Hellboy 2 cost $85 million to make and grossed $160 million worldwide, which is better, But it's still like you're still in very dicey territory there.
Yeah, as you are with all viable. Of Del Toro movies.
Right.
I mean, this is the thing. I just did a little quick research. I now realize why I like the score. It's a Danny Elfman score. And I didn't know why. I didn't know that he had done the score for Hellboy 2, but it is. I'd check it out if I were you.
Elfman.
Overrated. Ooh. Overrated in your view?
And I'm not the biggest fan. I like his Batman score.
Okay.
First Batman.
What about
score.
The Simpsons theme? Do you like that?
Yeah, that's okay. The Pee Wee Herman movie.
He did is that
the
okay Pee-wee too?
Herman. That's okay.
Yeah, he did like tons of great scores.
He did some. He
Beetlejuice,
did
the Beetlejuice score. Great.
Anyway.
And you didn't want me to talk about watches.
Transition. JBL, tell us about ExpressVPN.
Admit it. You think that cybercrime is something that happens to other people. You may think that no one wants your data, or that hackers can't grab your passwords or credit card details or see what websites you've been visiting, but you'd be wrong. Stealing data from unsuspecting people on public Wi-Fi is one of the simplest and cheapest ways for hackers to make money. When you leave your internet connection unencrypted, you might as well be writing your passwords and credit card numbers on a huge billboard for the rest of the world to see. That's why I decided to take action. To protect myself from cyber criminals, I use ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN secures and anonymizes. It makes your browsing history encrypted and invisible to the bad people. It hides your public IP. It's good. It's good. There. Is that enough? It is good.
It's good.
Good that it hides all your information from the bad people. And why do they use this word that I can't pronounce? ExpressVPN has easy-to-use apps that run seamlessly in the background of your computer, phone, and tablet. Turning on ExpressVPN protection only takes one click. Using ExpressVPN, I can safely surf on public Wi-Fi without being snooped on or having my personal data stolen. For less than $7 a month, you can get the same ExpressVPN protection that I have. ExpressVPN is rated the number one VPN service by TechRadar, and it comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So protect your online activity today and find out how you can get 3 months free at expressvpn.com/WFB. That's expressvpn.com/WFB for 3 months free with a one-year package. Visit expressvpn.com/WFB to learn more.
JVL, you had one more story about Hellboy that you wanted to share.
Okay, so I have a buddy who is an artist and writer out in Portlandia who I would say helped his career along back when I was at the old place. And he wound up with a gig at Portland's Big City Paper where he wrote a piece for their Sunday magazine. And they allowed him to illustrate it. It was a piece about how superhero movies were taking over Hollywood. And he drew this beautiful cover with all these superhero figures sort of standing in front of a movie set with a clapboard and blah, 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 blah. And Hellboy was swinging in from the corner.
I remember this piece, by the way. I've seen it. It was in your office.
Yes. So I emailed my buddy Mike Russell, and I said, Mike, I love that cover. Could I buy the original art from you? And he said, you can't, but your money's no good here. I'll send it to you. And I thought that was like the sweetest thing in the world. And he sent it to me. And then later told me that shortly after I had reached out to him, that Mike Mignola, the creator of Hellboy, who also lives in Portland, had reached out to him and said, I loved your cover there so much, and I particularly love how you interpreted Hellboy. Is there any way that I could get the Hellboy portion of that from you? And he said, Mike Mignola, I'm such a huge fan of yours, and I'm so sorry, but I've already promised to give this to my very dear friend, Jonathan Last, and so you can't have it.
Yes. Very nice.
Suck on that, Mike Mignola.
You should definitely say
that. What did he ever do to you?
Nothing. In fact, I have thought to myself at various points in my life, I ought to send that to Mike Mignola with a note. But then I realized that he probably doesn't remember any of this.
Not worth it, frankly. The art is better
but
to keep.
Mike Russell, people should go and look him up. Yeah. M.E. Russell, he's great.
All right, corrections, additions, shout-outs. I just wanted to give a quick shout-out to Sam Huffines for sending us a lovely bottle of Class A Azul tequila. At the end of the last show, I had kind of joked that I don't really drink tequila. I don't care for it. And then we got that bottle literally hours later, so I felt kind of bad. I will drink it once Vic comes back. Once Vic gets
no, that
gets
was
back
me
to the
who
office.
Said that I don't drink tequila.
I
you
also,
were fine.
I also don't drink tequila.
I was just trying to give you. It was you.
It was me. It was definitely me.
No, not
that's
me.
Fine.
I'm just trying to give you a way out.
You don't have to give me a way out. I know what I am. I know what I've done. But, you know.
Is this sipping tequila? Is that the type of tequila that you drink straight, or is it meant to be mixed?
It looks like a fancy tequila bottle, so I would assume it's sipping tequila, not shooting tequila. I don't know. I'll get some limes. We can all drink it together.
Okay.
I told Vic after you left that we should bring Kugel in here and just make him do a shot every 5 minutes while we're taping the show until he passes out. But I don't know if Matt would approve of this activity. So maybe we won't do that after all. All right. That's all the time we're giving to this episode. Questions, comments, complaints, compliments. Tweet us at SunnyBunch and at Continetti. That's right. That's your handle.
Well, I won't read them. So
that's a good point. He doesn't just tweet at me. That's all you animals all are. Just tweet at me anyway.
It's great being off Twitter, isn't it?
Well, I'm on Twitter.
He's on Twitter. He just doesn't read his mentions. Which is smart, probably. But anyway, be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. Just type in Subbeacon under podcast and we're there. Leave a review. Tell your friends. Until next time.
How long was that?
It was about, let's see, it's 58 minutes. There were a couple minutes at the beginning, so it's right about an hour. Do you have any outtakes? No outtakes?
I really don't.
We don't have any outtakes? The whole thing was fine?
I guess it was.
This
Matt,
is fine?
It's been okay. A long time. After you, it's been a while. It can be a little hard breaking it in again. Was it okay?
Did it not sound okay?
Trying to set you up for the tagline,
dude. You got to do the kicker. You got to say, this is, so we offer something.
I'm lobbing the matzo ball.
We throw it out there, and then you say, after we're done saying that, you say, I'm sure it's fine. That's all you have to do.
I'm sure it's fine.
Great. That's really, yeah, I'm sure that's fine.